Good morning, Maine. Thank you for listening. Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. Also available now on 100.5 FM. And as always, you can listen to past shows at TideSmartRadio.com as well as iTunes. Well, our first guest will be in just about a minute for a quick on this day. It is May 7th, 2016. This was the birth date of somebody who I greatly admired and respected as a broadcaster, the late, great Tim Russert. For many years, was the host of Meet the Press. He was born on this day in 1950 and passed away in 2008. Also on this day, Yvetta Perón, who was immortalized in the song Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. Do you remember that?
I do know the song.
I would try singing it, but that recording would come back to haunt me, so I won't. So anyhow, not a big day for celebrity birthdays around this day.
Quiet day.
Quiet day. So why don't we get right to the interview? Had a really fun time earlier this week talking with Don Thibodeau, who is one of the co-founders of Cold River Vodka, also CEO, owner of Green Thumbs Farm, 2,000 or 2,400 acre potato farm.
More than I can imagine.
I know. So let's learn about potatoes, learn about Don, learn about vodka, and thank you for listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. Here's our interview with Don Thibodeau.
It all starts with a family, land and a little seed. Say a prayer that the roots grow deep, 'cause it's all grown naturally.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM and 100.5 FM. Please join me in welcoming our guest, Don Thibodeau, who is the co-founder of Cold River Vodka and also owner of Fresh Solution Network and CEO of Green Thumb Farms. Welcome to the show, Don.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
I want to talk about all of it. I want to talk about farming. I want to talk about the Fresh Solutions Network and, of course, Cold River Vodka. But before we start talking about the businesses, why don't we talk a little bit about your background and where you grew up and talk about that a little bit, and then we'll start talking about agriculture and then later on vodka here in Maine. Are you a Mainer?
Yeah,
do you have your birth certificate? Because we're going to have to check it.
Many generations actually were Acadian or Cajun. From northern Maine, a county boy, born and raised. Moved down here to the Freiburg area in 77 with my wife.
Wow. It's funny when you say down here to Freiburg. That's north for a lot of people, but, you know, from Aroostook County, that is down, right?
Well, we gained 2 weeks of summer coming down and 2 weeks of fall.
That's funny. So you grew up here in Maine, and from growing up, was your family always involved with farming, or was that something that happened when you moved south a little bit?
No, my dad started in the sales business at 18 years old. I always wanted to farm, but he wasn't able to make it farming. This farm down here was some land that my dad and a friend of his had invested in, and his friend had died of leukemia, a gentleman by the name of Tim Thompson, a very dear friend, and it was for sale. I was working in the sales office for my dad, and I thought I saw an opportunity, and I talked my wife into picking up stakes and moving to southern Maine.
And is that Green Thumb Farms? Is that the name of the farms?
It is. It is. It started in 65. That was the name my dad tagged to it back in 65.
Wow. I'm looking here at my notes, and it shows that you grow potatoes on about 700 acres, but there's 2,400 acres at Green Thumb?
We've...
That's a lot.
Added to the acreage since my wife and I came down to Freiburg. But, yeah, we farm we farm 300 acres of yellow-eyed soldiers and Jacob's cattle beans. We're the largest producers of those in the world. That and
well, say that again. I didn't even. All I heard was beans. So
they're typical New England beans that our grandparents, my parents, always baked for the Saturday night beans.
Wow.
And they're what you would call an heirloom bean. They came over with the early settlers, and they're a bush bean as opposed to a vine bean. In other words, they're what we call a determinate. What flower comes is the bean is going to get. So the yields are not as great as they are in some of the other beans. But because it's New England, we've continued the tradition. It came with a farm purchase, and we've kept it up. We supply the major chains in the area and some food service. It's a once again, it's a New England bean. We ship them all over the United States through the internet, but it's a New England bean.
Wow, we have Don Thibodeau here. He is one of the co-founders, which we'll talk about a little bit later, on Cold River Vodka. But the farming in Maine has always been fascinating to me because we always talk about how weak our economy is. And Maine's economy has always been dependent on timber and logging and going back hundreds of years, boat building, and then most recently tourism has really been the big fuel. But I've talked to many people, and farming is much bigger than the average person would think. And even though our climate is mild relative to snow, there is still some rich soil. And so talk a little bit about farming in general in Maine and for Green Thumb Farms. You've got 2,400 acres, and so you must be really tied into the entire farming community. Talk about how healthy farming is and what other crops are kind of big here in Maine now.
Well, the largest acreage in the state of Maine is in northern Maine, in Rustic County. And Maine at one time in the 60s, the early 60s, was the largest producer of potatoes, fresh potatoes in the United States.
More so than Idaho?
Much more.
Wow.
The farmers that are farming potatoes left in the state of Maine, and I'm thinking of those Rustic County farmers, are probably some of the best farmers in the United States, if maybe not the best.
Wow.
The adversities to farming potatoes in northern Maine are much greater than any other place in the United States.
because of the cold weather, or yeah. Are there other factors other than cold weather?
Well, the degree days, there are less degree days in Rustic County probably than any other major potato-producing area, tier states here in the United States. And in New England, we fight with blight. And we fight with Colorado potato beetles, and we fight with leafhoppers and green peach aphids. And our competition in the West doesn't have those problems continually. So they're good. The potato farmers in this state are good. Those northern Maine guys are fantastic.
Is it a healthy crop? We talked about, because most people, if you had to ask the average American to identify potatoes with a state, Idaho potatoes, or just, I don't know if they're branded differently, but everyone associates Idaho and potatoes. Is the potato crop healthy in Maine? Is it growing? Is it stable? Is it retracting?
I would say that the production in the state of Maine has stabilized. It expands and contracts as depending on the markets for certain years. It depends on the Canadian dollar. It depends on exports. It depends on how strong the American dollar is. We'll change the acreage in this state. But yes, it's very healthy.
And other than potatoes, what other crops either are indigenous to Maine or could survive the winter that you think could be viable crops that we haven't really looked at on a mass-produced basis that could really have a positive economic impact? Somebody once told me that we're close to the same latitude is Italy, and grapes could be grown here. And there are a couple of small wine companies, I think. But what other fruit or vegetables, you know, is our climate, you know, suitable for?
You know, as a farmer, as a producer, and as an entrepreneur, and probably like many farmers, you're always thinking about that. That's what you do.
Because you have a resource, all this land, and you want to work the land. And
so every farmer looks for an alternative crop, a way to maybe enhance his own farm economically, sustainability, and that sort of thing. I can't imagine there's anything that's been missed here in the state of Maine. A lot of it has to do with markets. And what's happened in the, over the past is because the West, with some of the higher yields and the very inexpensive water they have been able to take a lot of the processing and take it to the West. And that has affected New England tremendously and the East Coast. As time passes and energy is more expensive, you find more need for stuff closer to home. And this buy local program that everybody talks about has been tremendous for the Maine farmer, for sure. And I'm sure a lot of farms that have a population around it they'd like to supply. So I believe probably everything from carrots to broccoli has all been tried, potatoes.
We have Don Thibodeau here. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. What about hydroponics? You know, since you have 2,400 acres of real land and dirt, I'm guessing that hydroponics don't really play a role in your mix, but Backyard Farms has built one of the largest hydroponic growing areas for tomatoes in Madison, and I was up there a couple of years ago, and to me it was fascinating. Yeah, you go through a very rural part of the state, you go around a corner, go over a hill, and before you know it, this giant enclosed hydroponics garden where they've had a couple challenges in the last few years with bugs because it's a closed system. Environment, closed system, ecosystem, and they've got bees pollinating. It's really a fascinating system, but you introduce one bug or one strain, then it can really ruin your whole crop. Does Maine have a viable market for more hydroponics, do you think?
Well, I think that as your market grows and as there's, you know, the population grows, sure. Hydroponics is particular to certain crops. Obviously, potatoes grow in the ground, and it's a little more difficult. Economically, probably isn't the best source of growing a potato, but hydroponics are a great thing, and Backyard has done a fantastic job.
Yeah, it's a fat. Have you been into their plant?
I've been around it.
Just driving, it's like this huge glass. It's like the Wizard of Oz. You go around a corner, and then you know. And they also do some solar production there for the heating. But there's this huge glass structure that just kind of goes on forever.
Yeah, there's a lot of them in the country. They're doing quite a job.
Well, we're getting ready to build a greenhouse here at Tide Smart. So after we get off the air, I may be asking you for some tips.
There you go.
So let's talk about your fifth generation family growing potatoes. And you've been on the Maine Potato Board, and you're one of the directors of Fresh Solutions Network. Talk a little bit about how you got into the vodka business, and talk a little bit about Cold River Vodka, which has gotten much acclaim over the last few years, and want to see how that kind of fits into the whole potato farming system you've set up.
Well, I think that we're probably more passionate about Cold River than maybe needs be, but it was a labor of love. That started from a series of bad years during the Atkins diet that we were facing in the potato industry. Everyone was cutting back on starches.
I thought you were talking about personally, and you're about as skinny as my right leg.
Nah.
I'm like, what are you talking about being on the Atkins diet?
I like plenty of starch.
You like your starch. I know. You have potatoes all the time.
But absolutely. I could live on potatoes. Actually, potatoes are considered nature's most perfect food.
Whoa. Okay, we're going to talk about vodka in a second, but please back up and tell me how potatoes, because they seem like just pure starch. It doesn't feel like it's very complex in terms of the makeup or the vitamin makeup.
They're loaded with vitamins. They're loaded with potassium. Next to bananas, they're right there as one of the highest potassium sources. You can live on potatoes and cover pretty much all your nutritional needs.
Wow. What about sweet potatoes? Is that a different? I always thought sweet potatoes were even better. I know they taste better sometimes.
It depends what you put on them, right?
I know. A little cinnamon, that can't make them healthy when you dump about,
I like sweet potatoes.
Oh, God, I like sweet potatoes.
Yeah. We actually, we handle quite a few sweet potatoes ourselves. We bring them in from North Carolina, Georgia, South Carolina.
And before we talk about Cold River Vodka, which you're one of the co-founders with, I believe, your brother, Dr. Lee Thibodeau, settle a family argument for me. My wife, you know, we have three kids, and when our kids were little, she used to always say when we had, you know, baked potatoes, you've got to eat the skin. The skin is where all the healthy nutrients. Now, you are a potato farmer for five generations. You've harvested thousands of tons of potatoes, so I will consider you the definitive expert on potatoes. Is that mythology, or is that really correct, that there's some sort of health benefit or vitamin benefit to potato skins, or is it really in just the potato part?
Well, I'd say probably your wife is probably one of the smartest people in the world.
Well, I knew that, but is it back it up with some facts?
I'll
here.
Back it up with the facts.
Okay.
My mother used to say the same thing to me.
And that's
she had to be one of the smartest people in the world.
Okay.
So, there's a lot of vitamins and nutrition in the skin. But for me to sit here and state the facts.
And break it down.
I can't. But I'm going to go with what my mother told me.
Well,
and your wife.
Between your mother and my wife, I wouldn't argue with either of them. Okay, let's get back to vodka. We have Don Thibodeau here, who I first found out about your, you know, Green Thumb Farms and your background from Cold River Vodka. You know, we live in a state where I think in the last 10 years, in areas first with microbrew beer has really exploded in the state, where it feels like, you know, everybody and literally his brother have opened up a little brew pub on their own street. But now also in terms of spirits. And so over the last few years, Cold River Vodka has really been getting a lot of attention as being a premium, very unique vodka, I believe, born from your potatoes, the pretty potatoes.
That's correct.
So talk about who had the idea first, you or your brother? And then what has been the process to go from being a potato farmer to starting your own vodka company?
Well, the old statement of necessity is the mother of invention.
Right.
When I looked at our situation during the Atkins, that would have been almost 12, it would have been 12 years ago now.
That's when people were told to get away from potato and starch? Or?
Well, that was when the agriculture in the United States was just getting pounded.
Right.
And the way that you make money on a farm is you have to utilize everything somehow. So we typically supply the table stock industry or the fresh market, which is chain stores and food service. So the idea is to try to make your appearance of your product and taste as good as you can. The way you do that is take out your culls. But when you don't have a home for your culls, you're less apt to take that product out and not be quite as discriminant.
When you say culls, explain what you mean.
Culls are off-grade. It could be everything from sizing, smaller potatoes. It could be a cut or a bruise.
An imperfection?
Imperfection. It could be just a skin discoloration. So when you take those out, you need to find another home for them. And typically you try to go to a processor with them. So we were looking at, or I was looking at, a way to return more per acre, return more back to the farm with the off-grade. As that process went about, I started remembering, first of all, the French fry business, a fully mature business. I can't compete with McCain's and Simplot and those people for sure. Same thing with potato chips. As I went through the process, I kept thinking of the stories my dad used to tell me about his uncles making alcohol behind the warehouse on the Blanchard Road in North Caribou, Maine.
Wow.
And he used to describe the still as he was a kid. So, with the internet, with questions, I started the process. My brother and I were headed to Aroostook County to, my dad was going to have he was 86 at the time, to have a rotator cuff redone. And my brother and I were headed to the county. We were probably halfway between Bangor and Holton, probably that Millinocket area on the interstate, cold February. I started telling him about my thoughts. And let's do it, he says. Let's do it. Well, there's more to it than let's do it. So those conversations ensued for
how long ago was
two
that?
Years. That would have been 12 years ago.
Okay.
So we discussed it for 2 years, roped in Christo, who was at the time had a background in making beer, and a brewmaster, and asked him if he wanted to participate with him with us. And after we convinced for a year and a half, he joined in, and we all went to a course in Lexington, Kentucky that Chris had laid out for 7 days. It was a course put on by Altec, and they basically went through the biology of making alcohol, microbiology. Professors were there from different universities.
Specific to potatoes or no. Any type of just the
alcohol. Alcohol in the United States at the time, because of all the big distillation plants for corn, for ethanol, right, was very hot. They had many different companies there with either training their crews to learn how to make alcohol or had a plant that they were going to build. There were engineers. 7 days of intense study about the development, the making, the building of plants, the making of alcohol. It wasn't necessarily potable alcohol. But anyway, and the funny thing is, you ask about potatoes, every one of these professors we talked to about the microbiology about potatoes, they knew it could be done, but nobody could tell us the actual process of making potato vodka.
Wow.
So we...
So there was no book to read.
No.
So once you found the basics in terms of alcohol and the microbiology, you had to almost write the book on how to take potatoes, which were your ugly potatoes that weren't that wouldn't go to market. And, you know, why don't we – this is fascinating to me. We have Don Thibodeau here. Why don't we start by talking about what is alcohol? And again, I think I took biology or science 4 times, and I never got it right, and then I had a whole educational thing at Needham High, which I don't like to get into, but – needless to say, math and science weren't my strongest subject. But talk a little bit about what is, as an element, alcohol, and then specifically, what are the attributes, the chemical attributes that make vodka, vodka, and let's talk about how you get there from potatoes.
Well, you can make alcohol out of any fermentable sugar. Okay, all sugars ferment.
All sugars. And so you see in movies, like in prison movies, guys take fruit.
Correct.
And they basically,
correct,
from the sugar.
Correct.
You have to heat it, or what's the process to convert sugar alcohol?
In our case, we have starch, which we have to convert to sugar. So you have to add an enzyme to that starch, which breaks the starch down, breaks the molecules down to a sugar. Then you add your yeast to the sugar. And that's what those yeast bodies eat, the sugar, and the byproducts, alcohol. So they can only convert so much sugar to alcohol before they kill themselves,
right,
the yeast. So it's usually somewhere in that 12% range. So that's alcohol, and that's what we do, anybody does, with beer, with wine, and with potatoes. Is that conversion of sugar to alcohol. Now, what we do, which is different than the beer and the wine folks, we do make, and you can call it a beer or a wine, because that's what we're making, and then we distill it down the same way you would distill water that you buy at the store to get rid of the impurities. And you boil it off to the point where the alcohol separates from the water, separates from the non-alcohol that you don't want. So you have pure ethanol. So you boil that off, and that's when you start, that's the distillation process. That's when you start trying to get to that pure alcohol. The purest you can make it without going through osmosis is about 98%. It will carry some water. So that's pretty much the process.
So that's to get to alcohol. And Sully, do you remember this from your college days?
Sure don't.
Sure don't. None of this chemistry. None of the
not much of it. No.
But alcohol is yeah, that is basically common to many spirits, right? Once the core element of alcohol, so there's no nuanced flavor. Once you have alcohol, and then how do you convert alcohol into the specific spirit of vodka?
Well, the definition of vodka is a clear, tasteless spirit, okay?
Hmm.
Which we know it's not tasteless, but anyway. So vodka is the product of good distillation, period. Okay? All the other products, whether it's our gin or our blueberry or even a whiskey or a bourbon, are all added to that ethanol through a process of either storage, being the whiskeys or the bourbons in
oak barrel or some other vessel so the taste kind of permeates.
That's correct.
Got it.
That's correct.
So what differentiates it between moonshine?
Well, really, that's all moonshine is. Is moonshine is just
a distilling process.
But moonshine is usually sold at full alcohol percentages, which is somewhere in that 98%. Okay, so that's why it's so moonshine so strong or hot. They don't cut it. We cut ours 40. It's 40%. It's 40% or 80 proof is what we cut our. Which most cut our vodka, most people do. Moonshine is generally not cut.
So if you have moonshine that's 98% alcohol, that's like 190 proof?
That's correct.
Just double, yeah. So that's like jet fuel.
Yeah, it's like jet fuel. We have the same thing until we cut it, but you aren't going to sell it that way.
Sally, that question seemed like it was coming from an informed place. You're not like a moonshiner? You know?
I'm not, but I may or may not know one.
You may or may not know one.
Maybe I was just curious.
Curious.
So the other definition, I don't think it's necessarily a written definition, but most people think that most moonshines made in the backwoods without a license. We happen to have a license, so maybe that's a that's a differentiation.
Fascinating. We have Don Thibodeau here. He is co-founder of Cold River Vodka. Their website is coldrivervodka.com. He is also CEO of Green Thumb Farms. So you talked about driving along with your brother, having the idea, and then testing it out. Talk a little bit about the process going from the idea to making up some batches, and then where is the origin of Cold River? And then talk about how that turned into kind of a brother-brother idea into a business.
Well, Lee's a microbiology major. He just loves this.
He's also an MD. I sat next to him. I mentioned you before at an event last week. And he's a world-renowned neurosurgeon. He has patents on stents, and he's done some really fascinating things. But for all his medical success, which is just awe-inspiring, he was wearing a Cold River vodka. And I was trying to talk to him about medical stuff, and he wanted to keep talking about how excited he was about this business doing with you.
Lee's a pretty high-strung boy.
Yeah, well, he's definitely a supporter. So talk about how it went from – I've had lots of discussions with my brother, back when we were talking, and it never went into a business. We never created a business. So talk about – what that was like, and then we'll talk about what the business is doing now.
Lee and I, I couldn't ask for a better brother, but we've had the brotherly spats, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, you mentioned before he's 18 months older.
Yeah, he's 18 months older.
So he's always pulls the big brother thing, right?
He used to.
Not anymore?
No, not anymore.
No, okay.
He used to when size made a difference, right?
Yeah.
We've had a... just a fantastic relationship. He's a great brother and very encouraging. He heard the same stories I heard growing up. So, we were on the same path when we started talking about this vodka. Like I said, we worked at it for 2 years before we actually pulled the trigger. We actually made some batches, probably... well, we didn't have a license with a still that we had picked up on the internet. looked like a bunch of fraternity brothers in the backside of his barn at his house.
It was
hilarious. We should have had a picture of it, but we didn't. Anyway, we went from that, like any entrepreneur, thinking that, you know, we had this all figured out. We found out 7 years later we didn't. You have to pay for your education, you know.
Right.
We paid. We were fortunate to have Chris. Chris has got a wonderful palate. Chris is a little more mild-mannered than Lee and I. So as we went through the process, we knew that we had to have a name. So we put everything down on paper. We would get together with our families and put just names up, names. Everything from Snow to 657 to Sugarloaf to Katahdin to Allagash to Rustic, everything. One day I went to the Gazetteer and I looked in the Freiburg area and I put down Washington, I put down Kearsarge, and I put down Coal River, which flows into Freiburg. And all these names went up on the boards and we kept looking at them, and we went through that process of elimination, having a vote. You only can pick 10, only can pick 5. And it ended up being that Cold River, as we did our research and had other people look at the names, Cold River stood out. Well, Cold River starts right at the base of Evans Notch, right at the Bald Faces or two. It starts there, what we call Basin Pond, and flows down into Freiburg. So as that went along, we decided we had to have a logo or a picture for our bottle, something to go with. So we gave it to an artist, and he took the name, took some pictures that looked very similar to Freiburg, came up and took some still pictures and put together what is now that image of the Bald Faces, the Cold River coming down through the mountains,
right,
and refreshing that aquifer there in Freiburg, which happens to be the largest aquifer in the state of Maine.
So that's your water source.
That's where the water source.
So it may not come
from
directly from the river, but
that's
from the aquifer that the river feeds into.
Correct. That's exactly right. So there's the name Cold River.
Wow. Fascinating. So You've got the logo, mm-hmm, you've done the development, and what for other vodkas? I told your brother the story the other night. This had to be almost a decade ago. I went to Moscow, and I was the guest of the minister of sport, and I was there with 4 other American business people, and a guy who was a president of a major university. We went to a meeting where we had our interpreters there. This is in Moscow in the dead of the winter. And I had thought that Stoli as a vodka is iconic vodka, very simple red label. And I was never much of a drink vodka straight kind of guy. But we went into this meeting, and there were 10 of us in the meeting, and there were 10 bottles of Stoli vodka with 10 shot glasses. And our Russian host started by singing some sort of Russian fight song. And it was, Yatska Vutska, and then everyone had to do a toast. They turned to us and wanted one of us to do an American fight song, and I came up with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And it went back to them, and it was the Lithuanian freedom song. And they're like, Yatska Vutska, just like you would imagine in the movies, this kind of this lyrical, powerful. And one of the other guys I was with came up with Frosty the Snowman. And so we didn't really have fight songs to drink Russian vodka with. But all the mythology about Russians really loving their vodka, it's true.
Oh, yes. Very true.
What are other vodkas made from? If starch to sugar can happen through other process, what's the most common vegetable, I guess, that
vodka is traditionally made out of grains.
And what does the potato, the fact that you have an abundance of these potatoes, so you get to the starch sugar part, is there anything particular within the flavor makeup or the starch makeup that is nuanced to potato vodka as opposed to grains vodka?
Yes. Potato vodka is typically smoother. It gives less burn. We have one step that's a little further. We like to say at Maine Distilleries we're ground to glass. We are probably the only large distiller, and as a micro distiller, we're producing more vodka than a lot of micro distillers. But the fact is that fresh potatoes give a different taste than even a dehydrated potato. So we're ground to glass, and it's smoother. It's got a little sweetness to it, which comes from unfermented sugars in a fresh potato.
Hmm.
So that's the difference.
Okay. We have Don Thibodeau here. He is one of the co-founders of Cold River Vodka, also owner of Green Thumb Farms. So talk about the business here in Maine. So once you perfected the recipe, that had to be its own learning experience in terms of how to start a distillery. And I think as many people know, alcohol, after Prohibition, alcohol and beer is all highly controlled by there's the federal law and state law. And, you know, years ago I worked with Miller Brewing Company, and it is regulated and controlled for both the manufacturer or brewers or distillers, and then for the distributors, and then for wherever it's sold at retail, and then ultimately consumers are regulated by age restrictions being 21. So talk about what that lesson was like, saying, okay, now we're going to start a business selling, you know, a controlled product like alcohol.
Well, being an independent businessman like myself in the farming business, you know, it's a matter of picking up the phone and convincing someone you have a product that they ought to put on their shelf. And it's like selling a car or anything else. You just go out and you work at it and show them the qualities that you have over somebody else. Not necessarily so in alcohol. Every state's different. The Fed is pretty uniform in your dealings with them, the license and what you have to do.
Is that the ATF that kind of controls it? Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms?
It is. It's really the TTB. Everyone knows it as the ATF.
Right.
So those are pretty consistent. The states, on the other hand, are all different. And for me to go into the detail would take us forever because every state's different. You have control states, non-control states.
How many states is Cold River Vodka in now?
We're in, I think, 15 or 14 states. That changes. We've become quite aggressive on our marketing and sales. We've just recently taken on a company to do our sales across the nation, a company by the name of Classic, who is throughout the United States and is looking to increase our movement across the United States, which we're very excited about. The development of markets is probably the biggest is word of mouth. You have to give them, the consumer, the end user, you have to get the product in their mouth. Once it's there, then you can sell. All the hype that goes with it is no good until you get it in their mouths. We like to rest on our laurels, on the fact that our product is a good product. That's organic growth, and that's how we have found.
Well, you've won awards and have been recognized. How much of the promotion of the product at the retail level or at the distributor level do you discuss directly or indirectly that it's a Maine product and or it comes from potatoes?
You know, that's worked very well here in the Northeast. Boston's become one of our larger markets, and Boston identifies with Maine, which has worked very well for us. I think outside, the further we get outside, we have to rely on brand building.
The further you get from the story of potatoes in Maine, the more you have to really kind of focus on the brand.
Yes, that's correct. But that's also working because we have a very good product.
Well, when people talk about microbreweries here in Maine, which have exploded, I don't have the numbers, but we've had Bissell Brothers on here a few months ago. I'm friends with Fred Forsley, and what he's done in Shipyard isn't really a microbrew. It's huge, a national brew. But how do you compare and how do you connect kind of the success in the microbrew beer business to now that you're doing something similar and you've had success in the spirits area with vodka and also gin, which is part of the Cold River portfolio?
The microbreweries
started... Is it just entrepreneurial, small biz? People like, you know, it's almost like boutique coffee places, too.
It is.
People like authentic, small family stuff, right?
Well, I think that you're playing on the fact that people like something different. They like to experiment. And the microbreweries have done a fantastic job bringing old world beer to the United States. And that's been 20, 25 years since David Geary started with Geary's beer. I remember when he first came, he was out there all by himself.
Right.
And micro distilleries are similar to that. It's an artisan process. These folks.
What Todd did with Allagash and goes right down the line.
Absolutely.
Gritty's has played a big role as a distribution point.
And these guys have done a fantastic job. Fantastic.
Yeah, it kind of created a market where, it's, I don't want to call it the hipsters, because Sully, you're part of that tribe, right? A hipster?
You shouldn't categorize me like that, you know.
I know. I'm not trying to limit you. I am trying to, you know, because millennials, you know, people are looking for authentic, whether it's sandals or hair care products.
Someone who put some work into it.
Some love into it. The anti-giant corporation thing as much as anything else. I think people, which you're seeing kind of in the political realm, you know, there's a younger generation, too, that have kind of grown up a little bit against the giant corporation, whatever that means.
The sellouts.
You didn't have to say that so viciously, the sellouts. but the small business kind of resonates with an ethos to a lot of consumers because it feels closer to real.
Well, I think the consumers are ready to experiment a little bit. And then they educate their palates. And they find out that they enjoy it. I love the craft beers. They're wonderful.
Right.
And I love to try craft beers in different towns. They're all different.
Because they're all different. Everyone has their own approach and their own...
And I think that's the same thing with spirits.
Where do you go now? Because the business that you're operating Coal River Vodka from is Maine Distilleries, is that right?
Yes.
So what is, you know, to what extent has Coal River Vodka and also gin from Maine Distilleries... It started as a niche business where you used the potatoes that weren't the prettiest potatoes in, you know, your farming business. And what's the growth trajectory? And is the vodka spirit business going to be the big business? And then your potato business and your farming business become secondary, or is they all just fit together?
We can all just hope, right?
We can. I don't know. I think that sounds exciting.
Actually, we've been at it now. We've actually been producing for 10 years. This has been our anniversary this year that we've been actually producing alcohol. We started 12 years ago, but actually producing. We started the still in August, 1st September, 10 years ago this past September. So we're almost into our 11th year.
Do you release distribution numbers? Are those public numbers? Or do you privately release to give folks kind of a general idea on how much vodka and gin you're producing? A bunch?
we produce about 6,000 cases a year, but we have changed that now in a growth mode that we're in, and we have some lofty growth plans for ourselves.
What are the new extensions? Are you sticking with the clear spirits being vodka and gin, or what other spirits make sense coming from potatoes?
We have a new barrel-aged vodka. Distiller's Reserve is the name of it. It's only released here in the state of Maine at this time. It is a great spirit. Most people think it's a bourbon.
But it's clear.
No,
it's not clear.
It's in a medium toasted oak, white oak barrel, and it has been aged. It's got the same color as a bourbon, and it tastes fantastic. It is.
But it's a vodka. So
Everything starts with alcohol.
Right. So right? That's the common, remember, that's the
you
core
remember the,
element.
Remember the discussion we had?
I do.
Okay.
But what do you call it? What do you market it as?
Well, we market it as a barrel-aged vodka. The identity is a little difficult right now, but it's because it's not in enough people's mouths yet, to be honest with you. Like I say, we had 8 barrels, so we're at a limited production on that particular bunch. We have more coming.
Right.
That batch is in short supply. So the acceptance has been fantastic. Everybody that's had it has just loved it. So that's encouraged us to produce more. It doesn't come quite as fast as the vodka because it is aged.
And when it's in the oak barrels, it takes on both the color and some of the taste of the oakiness or whatever that's...
It does. It takes on that taste that you would associate with a bourbon. It's got that nice, smooth taste. It's a caramel-type taste. It comes from that toasted barrel, the inside of that oak. Yes, it's very good.
What other, you know, there was a trend years ago for many vodka makers to add fruit taste to the vodka itself. I don't know, lemon or lime or apple. Was that a fad, or is adding flavors to Cold River vodka make sense or not for the future?
The flavored vodka market is starting to come out of vogue, although our blueberry just keeps chugging along and keeps taking market share. And I think, Steve, the difference between our flavored vodka, meaning the blueberry, is that we, in fact, use real Maine blueberry. Okay? So instead of, quote, flavorings, we use Maine blueberry, which has made a big difference. It's the same thing with our gin. We tried to flavor the vodka with flavorings for the gin. And finally, Chris threw up his hands, and when he couldn't get done what he wanted to get done, and he said, you know, we're going to do it the old-fashioned way. We're going to infuse it. So he gets the juniper berries. He has his own spices that he has added through his trials and tribulations. And that's, in fact, infused, which means it's soaked in alcohol, then, in fact, goes through the distillation process and imparts the flavor into the vodka, making a gin. So we've tried to stay away from using artificial flavorings and staying with the real thing.
Wow.
So if I may, real quick, the blueberry vodka, is it blueberry-flavored potato vodka?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not vodka made from blueberries.
No, it isn't.
Which apparently could also be a thing.
That's correct. You could, in fact, do that, yes. We infuse it once again. We use the blueberry extract. It comes from Wyman's. We're proud to say that it's all Maine.
Awesome.
Well, I've been reading up on what you've been doing, and, geez, you were named a few years ago as one of the leading spirits by the Spirit Journal, one of the top 5 spirits in the world, and an exclusive list assembled by a guy named Paul Picoult, who's one of the world's leading experts. You've been written up in Wine Enthusiast, CNN, Washington Post, Time Magazine, Boston Globe. Very exciting, the work that you're doing. And it feels like both when I saw Lee the other night wearing his jacket over his Cold River shirt, that both you guys are just really enthused about this business. Isn't that great? You can do something that feels fun. You're enjoying it.
It is. It's not work. It's very exciting. It's, the farm, the distillery. I enjoy myself, as does Brother Lee.
Well, I think that's finally in the last minute we have. So What can people look forward to in terms of either new products or in where is Cold River Vodka available, whether it's at retail or on premise?
I think that most restaurants that know their spirits,
Maine area,
are selling our products. It's nice to, we love to have people ask for it. If it's not there, if you ask, they will put it on their shelves. You can find it in most retail stores. The following gets greater all the time. New Hampshire does a heck of a job. I, of course, being in Freiburg, right next to North Conway, New Hampshire, it's in all the bars. It's great.
Horse Feathers? You ever go to that place, Horse Feathers?
I do, and they serve.
Yeah. Going up to the mountain, Mount Washington, like stopping off at Horse Feathers.
You know, you asked about Paul Picoult.
Right.
I'm going to tell you. He's one of the reasons why we continued with our barreled vodka, our Distiller's Reserve. He had made the statement that he wasn't going to put a stamp on it at the time, but don't quit, which was a lot of encouragement. So we have a lot of batches going now, and that should be in larger supply moving forward.
Well, I think it's exciting. I want to wish you and your brother Lee all the luck in the world. I think not just from a business or an economic standpoint, when people are doing passionate things here in Maine and then exporting that passion through product or service, I think it's great for the state. And I can't wait to go out and have dinner tonight and get a what's the best way to have Cold River Vodka served? And it seems like over ice would be natural because, you know, it's Cold River.
It is. The ladies love the blueberry just on the rocks. It is fantastic. Actually,
I do love blueberry vodka.
Okay.
I like it on the rocks.
Nailed it.
They tell me at the Oxford House in Freiburg, the best way to sell blueberry vodka is drop a bottle on the floor. And the aroma, everyone gets the aroma and wants some.
Well, that's funny.
So
I don't know if we want to waste it by dropping it on the floor, but I understand the idea. Well, for people that want information, you can go to coldrivervodka.com or for the Green Thumb Farm. The website is greenthumbfarms.com. Really appreciate you taking the time to come in. It was a pleasure meeting
you
and talking with you and learning about vodka here in Maine from potatoes. And also a few days ago, meeting your brother, Dr. Lee Thibodeau, who's a neurosurgeon here in Portland also.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Hopefully you'll come back sometime soon and
sure.
Feel free to bring a sample. We after 5 o'clock, we usually have sample parties here at Tide Smart Talk with Steve.
Well, there you go. I'll be back.
Well, thank you. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM, 100.5 FM. Please come back and join us next Saturday. Thank you.